Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Can I get a beef taco, please?
Oh, we don't do that here, sir. Can I offer you our vegan gluten-free broccoli tacos with cashew cheese?
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
How about some chicken fajitas? Can I do chicken fajita?
No chicken fajitas either, sir. How about some crispy kale lettuce wrap?
A what wrap?
Crispy kale wrapped in lettuce with a side of vegan coleslaw.
So it's a salad wrapped in a salad with a side of salad.
It is Taco Tuesday, you can probably guess. 888-914-9149. Got a note that came in. Where did it go? It was here a second ago. Let's see. This is from, here we go. This is from Philip, listening in Los Angeles on 93KHJ. And the subject is helping out kids. Now, he's referring to some of my commentary on this topic earlier in the show today. And I was saying that I think it's really not a good idea for parents to be paying the bills for their young adult children. So paying their cell phone bill, paying their car payment, paying their insurance. I personally am very much against that for the main reason. Now, there are times when it's necessary or you have to help them for some reason. That's different. But as a general rule, I think it sets them up to be more complacent and there's less hustle. If they have to pay for those things themselves, they're going to have to hustle and make it work. And that's good life lessons. Those are good life lessons for the kids. So that was the context of what Philip is writing about. So he says, I listen to your show every morning, playing devil's advocate here. You said a few minutes ago, if you're paying for your kid's cell phone and car insurance, you're not doing them any favors. My question is, did the prodigal son's father do him any favors by giving his son, monetarily speaking, absolutely everything? Well, as we know from the moral of the story, no, he didn't do him any favors because what did the son do? He squandered all of that inheritance in riotous, dissipated living. And he was penniless at the end of it. So there went down a rat hole all of his father's hard work, years and years of sweat equity down the drain. And that's not doing your son any favor. But the lesson, of course, in that parable has to do with repentance and forgiveness and restoration. So I see the point you're making, but I don't think that that's the point of the parable. The point of the parable, I don't think we could extrapolate from that parable that it's okay or even maybe beneficial to pay for your kid's cell phone and car insurance and other things like that. And you notice, too, that the father didn't volunteer this. He didn't say, hey, let me pay for all that stuff for you. The son demanded it. Give me my share because I'm out of here. And I want my share of the money because I'm going to go live my life the way I want to. And the father, well, okay. I think it's a bad idea, but here you go. So that's my thought. Very interesting juxtaposition, though, Phil. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. How about Katrina now? Let's go to Georgetown, Texas, and talk to Katrina. Hi, Katrina.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm actually calling with the same type of thought and question for you as a father who raised 11 children. So our eldest is in her first year at A&M right now, and she worked part-time, you know, through high school when she could at Lifeguard it locally and in a coffee shop. And right now it's not working, and we're paying for everything. And she...
I bet you love that.
Oh, fantastic. And did I mention she's the oldest of four daughters?
Oh,
so she's around a lot of girls who are just kind of handed everything, you know. And so I grew up working and, you know, when I got my first car, I paid the insurance. And, you know, through college, I worked, you know, one job, if not two jobs at times to you know, help out and stuff. And so I have a strong work ethic, as does my husband. So I struggle with just handing her everything.
Yeah.
So, and
how old
the
is
thing
she?
Is too, she's 19. So she took a gap year because she was supposed to do a mission trip and then that got canceled because of COVID. And, she has a servant's heart. She has a heart for mission work, which I love. So she works at a youth camp in the summer. And well, last summer was her first summer. And then she also has been doing some work with youth, you know, underprivileged youth in College Station A&M area. And so, which I love all that. And I want to, you know, I want to encourage that, right? But she's basically telling us that she can't work because she doesn't have time. And the reason she doesn't have time, Patrick, is because she has a servant's heart and she's doing missionary work and, like, you know, volunteer work, which I love. She's not off, you know, partying and getting into trouble, right? But at what point do we as parents say, okay, you know, we've supported you for this whole first college year and, you know, we're trying to support you getting your feet wet and getting used to school and whatnot. But at what point do we say, okay, it's time for you to start paying for your phone and contributing to your car and insurance and whatnot?
I think
right
now's
now we're
the time.
Paying for everything.
Yeah, I think now's, you probably guessed that that's what I would say. I think now's the time. Now, you could remind her that St. Paul had a servant's heart, that's for sure, but he also worked as a tent maker to make ends meet. So he did not live off other people's generosity. I mean, he benefited from their generosity, but he didn't live off it. And he didn't expect that other people would just pay for everything. So he worked. So he was out there preaching the gospel. Talk about a servant's heart. He was doing that.
Yeah.
And he maintained a profession so that he could earn money to underwrite his own efforts. So that's something that you could show her and to say, you know, you really, if you want to be truly apostolic, there's a clue there. But the other thing, too, to go back to what you were saying, is that she does, in other words, it's a, there's a third option here. It's not either do mission work or work. She could do both.
Right. And she could, yeah.
Yeah, she could. And so maybe this, and I don't know her. She sounds like a wonderful young woman. And I'm sure with you as her mom, she is a wonderful young woman. But all of us are prone to our own little defects. And one thing that could be going on here is that her own, I don't want to say laziness, because that's probably not the right word, but her desire to avoid work could be masked behind this shiny exterior of, I have a quote-unquote heart for service, and look at me, I'm out there doing all these things to help other people. When in fact, that could be partly a rationalization for not having to work, because it's easier if you don't have to work, you know?
Yeah. That's what I told my husband. I mean, volunteering is a privilege. You know, I've been blessed to stay home and do some ministry work in the pro-life field and volunteer at different organizations through the years. But I worked hard for many, many years and didn't, I mean, I could volunteer here and there, but couldn't do it all the time. Right. So I want to encourage that. And two, I mean, we're also funding, you know, we pay for her room and board, right? So we're doing all that. And then it's like, you know, I need some stuff at Target, and we're all these little things that we're kind of giving her allowance for that I feel like she could easily, you know, cover on her own. So I'm kind of starting to feel like, you know, telling my husband that we really need to kind of put the law of the land down and say that at a certain point she needs not to be, you know, she's not doing anything wrong and we want to encourage all the goodness, but just to instill more responsibility and kind of, you know, fending for herself a little bit and you know, helping us here as well, because like I said, we have three other daughters behind her and this is our first going off to college. So we're trying to, you know, it's still a learning curve for us. I'm sure maybe we'll have it down by the twins, but you know,
how old are the younger daughters?
Anyways. Well, so she's 19 and then I have a 15-year-old and then I have twin 13-year-olds.
Okay. So let's talk for
a
minute about
mass exodus when they all leave.
Well, talk about an empty nest. That'll be different. Well, just a thought here about the three younger ones, and this is more by way of kind of a strategy. My suggestion would be, so your 15-year-old is not driving yet, but will be driving sometime soon, most likely. Here's what we did. When the kids got to be about 15 years of age and it was time to go get a job, here's what I told my kids. I said, if you want to get a, if you want to get your permit, that's fine. And I'll be happy to take you out, we'll give you driving lessons and all of that. And when you want to get your license, you have to have driving school. So that's going to be about $250. I don't know what it is now, but that's what it was back in the day. So if you want to go to driving school so that you can get your license, you have to pay for that. So that means you're going to have to get a job, and they would work at the local sandwich shop, or they'd work at the local grocery store, bag groceries and things like that. But I said, you're welcome to do that, and we'll support you in doing it, but you have to pay for it. And so they did. And then it was when it was time to get a car, we'll help you get a car, but you have to either save up your money for a down payment or you pay us back. And also your car insurance will keep you on our plan until you're 18. And whatever the portion of our car insurance monthly bill is that you're eating up, you know, that you're responsible for, you have to pay that to us every month. And if you want to have a cell phone, that's fine. You can do that when you're old enough. And whatever that costs us on our plan, X dollars a month, whatever, you have to pay for that. And when you turn 18, you have to spin off. And all of these things that we're including you on under the family plan until you're 18, at that point, that stops. And if you want to have your own cell phone, you have to have your own plan. If you want to have a car, right, you have to have your own insurance in your own name, and so on. And I did that with every single one of my children. Now, I won't say that it was always fun and games, because there were times when they didn't like that. But one of my sons, Katrina, this is one of the things that really makes me happy later in life. One of my sons with whom I would butt heads all the time, he's gone on to become a really successful engineer. He was a Navy chief, happily married with beautiful children, just a success story from every side that you look at it. But we used to butt heads over this issue because it made him angry that I wouldn't pay for these things. And just maybe a year or two ago, he took me aside and in a very, you know, emotional, not in like a crying way or anything like that, but just it was emotionally very beautiful. And he said, Dad, I just want to thank you. And he's in his mid-30s now. He said, I just want to thank you because I didn't like it when you made me buy everything and I didn't understand it and I resented you for it. But he said, it was so helpful to me. And as I look back on it, I'm just grateful to you that you had that, you know, you had that commitment to not paying for these things, not because you wanted the money, but because you wanted us to learn. And he said, and I really want to thank you for that. So that was so meaningful to me, Katrina.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel the same way about my parents. It was like, you know, they taught me a really strong work ethic. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to instill in our children as well, you know? So, And as far as phones go, we did get our eldest daughter that's off to college. We did get her an iPhone mm-hmm. when she was probably about, I think 14 or 15. She was at the time was in full-time Catholic school, and then we ended up homeschooling for a while. And, okay. But we, trust me, none of our other children will. I told my, you know, they have my 15-year-old has a Gab phone, which mm-hmm. I love.
Because you can't do very much on those, right?
You can't do anything on it. And, you know, she still is a prolific reader. As soon as you give them an iPhone, they stop doing all these things. So we have learned a lot, and she's a good girl, and I'm thankful for that. I just feel like there's value. I think that some of the hard work that we grew up with in our generation, like in my generation, mm-hmm. it's not the same, you know, with this generation. A lot of these kids never worked in high school. All of my friends worked in high school part-time or something, yeah. you know, babies. And so I just want to make sure, you know, that we as parents are not giving her an opportunity to feel entitled or not have that drive to go and provide for her, you know. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, take her own responsibility by the home and stuff like that. So
I think two things will happen. This is my thought, Katrina. Number one, as you are lovingly guiding your oldest daughter and weaning her off of some of these supports that she doesn't really need, she likes them, but she doesn't need them. That will help to educate your younger children. And the other thing I would suggest is, this is where I was heading earlier and I got a bit sidetracked, but I would start them off now understanding when you get to 15 years old, you want to start driving, you want to get your license. These are some of the things, you know, your father and I are going to support you for sure, but you're going to have to get a job. You're going to have to earn money. It's going to be something you have to be responsible to make happen. And we're not going to pay your cell phone bill, and we're not going to pay your car insurance. You can have the privileges, but you have to earn them. And you have to earn money. to support those privileges. And I just believe with all my heart that that is a very reasonable, it's a very loving kind of arrangement, and it does inculcate in your kids a good attitude toward the value of work and not taking things for granted like your parents and their money. It's easy to spend other people's money, that's for sure. So what a wonderful opportunity to talk with you, Katrina. I really appreciate that. Thank you. And
you as well, Patrick. Have a wonderful blessed week. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Yeah. I'm hopeful that all of these things will play out nicely the next time the conversation comes up in Georgetown, Texas. We're going to take a break and I'll come back to your phone calls right after this. Here's the number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. St. Paul worked to make money to do what he had to do. You can read about that in Acts chapter 18. He was a tent maker and he made money because that was the right thing to do. Be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149.
Taco Town!
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Taco Town!
Hey, I have a note from an anonymous listener. I do know her name, and she does live in L.A. She's listening in the L.A. area, but I'm just going to leave her anonymous because that's what she would like. So she says, three times this year when I went to confession, the priest had a cell phone in the confessional. This is three different priests in two different parishes. One time, the priest was welcoming me and must have thought I was going to kneel, but I saw the chair and took a seat and saw him holding his cell phone. I startled him and he set his phone down. Another time, the phone rang as I was walking in the confessional. That must have been weird. The last time, I just stared at the priest's cell phone that was sitting on the table between his chair and mine. This makes me feel so uncomfortable. Is this allowed or is this just my issue? I would appreciate your comments. And P.S., I love your show. Thanks for that. Well, no, I don't think it's just you because let's face it, the cell phone is an intrusion. I mean, even like at the dinner table, and I'm guilty of this, so I'll freely admit that I've done this myself and I don't think it's a good thing. And that is if you're at the dinner table and you're having a meal with people, I'll have my cell phone like on the table sometimes, but more and more I try to maybe put it behind me or put it where it's not like right there because it's an intrusion. And if I'm there to have a meal with you, I'd rather have a meal with you. And I think you'd rather have a meal where the other person's talking with you as opposed to looking at a cell phone. That's one thing. The other thing is the privacy issue. And although I'm not a priest, obviously, and I've never heard anyone's confession, I've gone to confession a billion and one times myself. So I know that when I'm in the confessional, I want God to hear what I have to say, and I want the priest to hear what I have to say, and I don't want anyone else to hear what I have to say. I'd like to think my confessions are pretty plain vanilla, but even so, whether they're plain vanilla or spicy hot, I don't want anyone to know what I'm saying, because I'm there to be cleansed of my sins.
Oh, sorry. That was me.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing you don't want to hear in the confessional. So that would be the second reason why I would concur with you that this is not a good idea. Because, first of all, if the priest is hearing your confession, is he looking at his cell phone? Is he scrolling through Twitter? Is he shopping on Amazon? Is he looking at emails? And if he is, he's not really doing what he's supposed to be doing, obviously. He's supposed to be concentrating on you and being there for you. So as much as it is an intrusion and it's a very likely possibility that somebody could overhear what's being said, the third thing would be, on the, in the case of the priest, it distracts him from doing his ministry. So my policy, for what it's worth, Anonymous, and this is just me, I'm just sharing from my own life, round about the time that I ever got a cell phone, long time ago, I just would turn it off and leave it in the car. I wouldn't bring it with me. Now, sometimes I would do that just absentmindedly, but I make a point of just have, I don't even want it with me. I don't even want it on me when I go to confession, because there's always that possibility that, you know, Chinese Communist Party, I don't know, whoever might decide to try to listen in. It happens. It really does happen. And I don't want that. So for the sake of you as the penitent, you deserve anonymity, you deserve privacy, and all those things. In my view, I think it's not a good idea for the priest to have his phone with him. Now, if he has it with him or on him because if there's some emergency or whatever, that's okay. I'm not talking about that. But I would say if you're a priest and you're going in the confessional and you're going to be hearing confessions for an hour, just turn your phone off. That way you're not likely to be distracted. And if there's a line of people, one after the other, that hour will go by quickly, I think. But if you're there waiting for somebody to show up, that might be different. But that would give you an opportunity to read your breviary, you know, to pray your office. Those are the kind of things that seem more consistent with being in the confessional. One final thought here, Anonymous, and this is from something that happened on the program. We were talking about the danger of, or at least the possible danger of your cell phone listening to you, listening in on your conversations. And it was an article from a tech magazine about how this really does happen, and target marketing, where companies will suddenly send you marketing for something that's based upon what the phone heard you say. You know, if it's Alexa or whatever, what did the phone hear you say? Because it's listening. And so we talked about that. And then later in that same show, that same day, you remember this, Cyrus, you probably know what I'm about to say. There was a totally unrelated call that came in from a woman wondering if, after losing a lot of weight and there was some excess skin, would it be morally okay to go in for some cosmetic surgery to remove all the excess skin because of, you know, it's unsightly, etc. I've never talked about that I know of ever in my lifetime, and that was call that came and went. So later in the same show, the same day, another person calls in and she said, "You'll never guess what happened. I heard you talk about how cell phones are listening, and I'm listening to you, by the way, on my cell phone." She says, "I'm listening to you on the Relevant Radio app. And I heard the call, or I heard you're talking about the intrusiveness of cell phones and how they do eavesdrop and they do listen." And then she said, "I heard the call about the lady wondering about the excess skin removal." And she says, within, and I don't remember now how long it was, within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, she said, "My phone starts serving up ads for excess skin removal surgery." And she said, "I'm slim and trim. I don't need that. I've never talked about it. I've never thought about it. I only heard it on your show through my phone. Next thing you know, my phone is sending me ads for excess skin removal surgery." Remember that, Cyrus?
It's crazy. This is
that crazy. Your way of saying no, you don't remember?
I do remember.
I sure remember it.
And yeah, it's happened. This has happened to us too. Hal wants to.
"This conversation can serve no purpose anymore."
Thanks, Hal.
"This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it."
What mission is that, Hal?
Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, I wonder. They are we are all products. What we're consumers, right? And the whole point of these phones is to listen, so they can sell us ads.
Yeah.
So we buy stuff.
Yeah, and that's the name of the game. But then there can also be nefarious reasons why somebody might want to do that. So, you know, we know that there are people who would like to get the goods on political figures, for example, or whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be politics, but we live in a world where it's so possible now with technology to eavesdrop and surveil in ways that you never imagined possible. I remember reading an article maybe 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, about Mark Zuckerberg the head of Facebook, and how he routinely, all of his laptops or phones or whatever, all have tape covering the cameras.
Yeah, you can see it in every photo of him sitting in his office. There's tape in the background on his computer. And I've heard that all of these tech giants do not allow their children to have cell phones.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I've heard that too. So I don't think the cell phone is anything we can get away from anymore. It's just too all-encompassing in our lives. I mean, my life is greatly influenced and depends upon, in many ways, my cell phone, because that's email and show prep and communication and all the other things that go into it. For me, at least, it's far more work-related than anything else. But it's a tool that I use constantly every day. And so I don't know that we can ever disentangle ourselves from this until the next big thing comes along and cell phones are obsolete. But whatever the next thing is, it'll be even more obtrusive, I think. But in the meantime, just having some safeguarding, and this goes back to the email that I read a minute ago from a lady who's just kind of discombobulated about the priests having cell phones with them in the confessional. So I guess I've covered everything I have to say on that topic, but it's interesting that Sean just wrote me a note a moment ago. Sean's listening on the Relevant Radio app, and it's on this topic, Sacrament of Reconciliation and Cell Phones. He says, reminder, all cell phones are always on and recording, sending intel to the federal global government. Edward Snowden proved this fact. This is an intrusion into the sanctity of the confessional. All cell phones must be out of the confessional. I agree. That's why I never take mine in. And I'm really careful. I'll just add this, and I don't have to be specific about it, but I'm really careful about things like knowing where my cell phone is and if it's on, and things like that. It just we can't be too careful. What do you want to say, Cyrus?
Oh, when I was growing up, my mom would always say the government wants to constantly listen, and you know, a lot of conspiracy stuff, and. And so we gotta fight that kind of system. But now here we are 20, 30 years later, and every single one of us has that listening device in our pocket, and we're constantly looking at it and talking to it and telling it what we're interested in.
Yeah, the things they know about me and you and everybody listening and whoever they are.
Yeah, whoever they are.
You know, right. I'm sure Facebook has their slice of the pie. I'm sure, you know, whether it's the government or other agencies, what have you, I'm sure they have a slice of the pie. And what's also intriguing in a scary kind of way is that even if today entity X isn't listening or observing what you're saying or doing, you know that the way the technology is, that they may decide 6 months or a year from now, oh, we'd like to go back and access that. And they'll be able to.
We have the technology.
One thing, I'll tell you what, one thing is that these realities, certainly, if you ask me, are an incentive to good behavior. They should incentivize you to want to be good and not be bad, and to not be behind the scenes something other than what you would want people to think about you. So who you are in public should be how you are in private life. And if this technology is what I think it is, then remember how Jesus said, what you do in the dark will be brought out into the light. What you say in secret will be shouted from the rooftops. I think this cell phone technology that we have right now is quite capable of doing all of that. All of it. So,
man. Terrifying.
It is. Here's a note from Anita. And Anita's listening in Chicago. She just sent me this. Thank you, Anita. She says, just a little twist on this topic of cell phones in the confessional. Many priests say their daily office on their phones and also have prayers on their phones. I also see the daily office on my phone sometimes in church. I get it, and I understand where you're coming from, Anita. At first, when my wife, because she has a, and I don't remember the app that she has, but it's the app with the readings and all that. Must be the Relevant Radio app. That's what it is. And the first time I noticed her in church looking at her cell phone, I kind of glanced over at her like, well, we're in church, honey. But I realized that she was, you know, saying her prayers and she was doing the readings from her phone.
She wasn't playing Wordle?
No. 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 So that is a good point. And I do agree that there are priests who have those resources on their phones. But even still, I would still recommend... I mean, I'll never be a bishop, but if I were a bishop, I could imagine myself instructing the presbyterate in my diocese, fathers, reverend fathers, when you hear confessions, please either have your phones turned off or don't have them with you, because it does erode privacy, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks for the email, Anita. Let's go now, where are we going? Let's go now to Jay in Orange County. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I have a quick question about, I believe just education. I have a first grader and a third grader, and we live in Orange County, and we've lived here for a couple of years, and I wanted to take your advice on how to possibly pursue their education, private or even homeschooling. With homeschooling, I know you had mentioned like Holby Academy, but I didn't know where the socialization component would occur. So, yeah, in any case, I know you lived in Orange County a long time ago, but if you had any advice, suggestions, or anything, I appreciate it.
I do. Yeah, I do. So tell me how old your kids are again, or what's their age range?
So he'll be seven and one's nine. So first and third grade.
Okay. And are they in like a local, I don't know, local grammar school right now?
Local public school, yes. Right near our house.
Okay.
They are learning things that are contradictory, but it's a great school. We love their teachers, but just, at this point, we're just wanting to send our thinking about our children's faith, and they do attend, religious education, but I don't know if it's great, yeah. But we do more. We'd like to do more.
Well, you mentioned homeschooling. One thing you could do is get in touch with our friends at Colby Academy. Their website is colby.org, K-O-L-B-E, and they have a whole system laid out for you where you can customize what you want to do with your kids as they get into the higher grades, and they would be in a good position to give you some suggestions on how you might structure what you want to do. So one way is to do a complete curriculum with a homeschooling company like Colby. Another way would be to have a hybrid where maybe your kids are using some of a curriculum and then they go to school, or I've seen situations where there's a consortium of families and there may be a tutor that every Tuesday and Thursday tutors the kids as a group for a couple of hours. I've seen that happen too. So a lot of it will depend upon what's your budget, what is your time commitment, what are some of the things that you'd like to see done. And now it's just really easy to do that. It wasn't so easy back in the day, back in the 80s or 90s, when a lot of these resources didn't exist. So you have really a lot of opportunities, a lot of options. And I would start with Colby. Go to colby.org and just take a look at what they've got and maybe ask them for some suggestions.
Got it. Thank you. I am kind of strapped for time just because our youngest is he's sick, and so I have to tend to him a lot. Mm-hmm. Our 4-year-old. So I do want to explore the homeschooling route, but if there was, I know that some private schools are Catholic schools are more religious than I think other private schools, or that's how I hear. And so I'm kind of thinking about that route too, but did you have any advice on how I could approach that route?
Well, so you're in Orange County and there are a lot of great Catholic schools in the Orange County area. So that's one nice thing in your favor. There's a school that some of my younger nieces and nephews have attended. It's a high school. It's J. Sarah down in San Juan Capistrano. I don't know how far you are. I don't know where you are in Orange County, but that's a high school, but that's still years away for your kids. So the best I can tell you on this issue, Jay, would be start doing some investigating, look around at some of the schools, visit the schools if you want to go in that direction. And that's how you're really going to find out what is a good fit for your kids and for you and your husband, by going and looking and seeing. There are some schools that really stand out. They have a great reputation for not only academics, but also fidelity to the church, which is an important thing, because you don't want your kids to have great academics and lousy faith formation. That's not good. So you want both. And so doing a little bit of that legwork will help you a lot. Anyway, I've got to take a break, Jay. Thank you. It's always nice to think about where I used to live in Orange County. And I'll be right back with more on this Taco Tuesday right after this.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
I'm waiting to see if she's going to say anything more. I guess not. That's right. That's right. Happy Taco Tuesday, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. How about Casey now in Chicago? Good morning, Casey. I guess Casey's not ready.
Oh, so Casey's young Thomas, listening to her radio. I could hear it in the background.
I thought I heard something like that. All right, young Thomas, you know what you have to do. So pick up with Casey and we'll get her sorted out. Let's go to Dan in the meantime in New Buffalo, Michigan. Excuse me. Good morning, Dan.
Michigan. Good morning. Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
First, real quick. I read your mission statement, and I got to say I love that. I used to have a poster, The Fellowship of the Unashamed.
Isn't it great?
It's just fantastic. Yes, it is.
Now, I just must add, for the sake of complete transparency, I did not write that. And I'm not, there's a bit of a dispute as to who wrote it. Different people claim to have written it. I didn't write it, but I certainly endorse it. The people who go to my website and see that mission statement, they usually have the reaction that you're having right now, Dan.
Oh, very good. A couple of months ago, in our church bulletin, it said Father was welcoming two of the members, new members of the parish, and it was two men with the same last name. And I'm thinking, they could be brothers, two brothers, or father and a brother. But I said, what if they're an openly gay married couple? And I thought, well, you can't let an openly gay married couple join a parish. That's totally wrong. And so that's what I'd like you to comment on. But also, if an openly gay married couple or just an obviously gay person came up to receive Holy Communion, I used to be a Eucharistic minister, and I don't know if I could give communion to. I mean, you can't be sure in that situation, but with the married couple, you should know. So anyways, I wanted to know where the church stands and what your thoughts, your input on that.
And specifically on the morality or immorality of same-sex couples, is that what you mean?
Joining the parish, being allowed to join a parish.
Well, that's an interesting question. I do know that the church is really clear that if you are living in the state of mortal sin, you can certainly come to church, you can certainly be present at Mass, everyone is welcome, but that you should not receive Holy Communion if you're persisting in mortal sin. And if you are aware of mortal sin on your soul, you have to go to confession first and be serious about wanting to avoid that sin in the future. So if you're asking about communion, that's the church's teaching on that. If you're asking about being present at church or even registering in the parish, I'm not aware that the church would say no to that couple, you know, two men or two women. But if the priest is doing his job, and if he's a believer and he's preaching the gospel, he would admonish them and tell them that that's an immoral lifestyle. And if they want to be true followers of Jesus, then they have to, as Jesus said, deny yourself, pick up your cross and follow me. And different people have different crosses, but we're all called to holiness. We're all called to a life of purity and chastity. And so in their case, it just takes a different form than it would take in my case or your case. And it's still the same call to holiness. So if the priest is doing his job, then he would be telling them that. Am I answering your question, or was your question
sort
somewhat different?
So the priest would say, priest said, yeah, you're welcome to join the parish. You can become members of our parish, but you can't continue to live as husband and wife. That is a mortal sin, and you can't do that.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And there will probably be a whole lot of ruckus and, you know, hooping and hollering and all kinds of pushback and maybe angry letters to his bishop, and people will walk out, and how dare Father McGillicuddy say this? All he's doing is just telling the truth. And for some people nowadays, that's intolerable. So in addition to saying what I think the priest should do, I can also guarantee that he will have to pay a price for doing it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Definitely. So, okay. So, yes, you can join our parish, but sorry, you can't continue living the way you are.
Well, I don't know how well. Yeah, how do you, I mean, what did Jesus say to the woman who was caught in adultery when all of her accusers had walked away and dropped the stones that they were about to stone her with, and she's left there with the Lord, and he says, you know, where are your accusers? And what is the last thing he says to her? He says, go and sin no more. So Jesus says, I'm not here to condemn you. I'm here to, you know, to heal you. He didn't say those words, but he, you know, that's the import of them. I'm here to forgive you, but go and sin no more. In other words, don't go right back to doing what you were doing that caused this problem in the first place.
Right. Right. All right. Well, thank you, Patrick. I appreciate your input.
Nice chatting with you. I appreciate that. How about Matt now, listening in Denver? Good morning, Matt.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
This is somewhat related to what we were just talking about. My question is, with one of the spiritual works of mercy is to admonish the sinner. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, how does that square with what Jesus says in the Gospels when he says to remove the wooden beam from your eye before you remove the splinter from your brother's eye?
Yeah.
seems to me like I'm always going to have wooden beams in my eyes, and I'll never be able to remove splinters. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no doubt that we have them. So in Matthew 7, where Jesus talks about that, you notice that he says in verse 5, you hypocrite. So let's read the passage, because there's something really important about what you're asking that we should take a look at. So he says, why do you look at the speck of dust? Well, let me begin in verse 1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the way that you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So I think the key to answering your question is the word hypocrite. So Jesus is identifying a scenario in which the person who seeks to correct the other person for, I guess, something comparatively smaller, is a hypocrite because he has his own serious problem and he's not attending to that problem. He's worried about somebody else's problem. Not everybody is a hypocrite, and not everybody has some serious problem that they should look after first before they try to help other people. I mean, there are people in the world, there are people in the church who are virtuous and who really do live a life in which they are attending to their own problems, and they're not busybodies trying to correct everybody else, but there is a time and place when you need to do that. So that's why I'm saying these are not mutually exclusive concepts. The hypocrisy angle, to me, is what's driving this teaching of the Lord here in Matthew chapter 7, but in other circumstances, like you point out, admonishing the sinner. Look at St. Paul. I mean, he spent his whole adult life after his conversion admonishing the sinner. And it doesn't mean that he was a hypocrite. It just means that he had his life in order and he was in a position to admonish other people. So there is a happy medium there, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Sure, that makes sense. I guess a follow-up to that is, how do you charitably admonish a sinner, especially in this day and age when you know, everybody would, or a lot of people would think that you are judging them for pointing out certain things that need to be admonished.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, none of us likes to be admonished. None of us likes to be told that what we're doing is wrong, especially when the person telling us is right. That's not a good feeling, obviously. So it seems to me that the best way to do it is try to have your house in order, be close to the Lord in the sacraments, prayer, etc. Be honest with yourself. Don't be a busybody. I'm not saying this to you per se, Matt, just all of us in general. Don't be a busybody. If you have some reason that you have to intervene, like with your kids or in a family setting or an employee or something where you do have some obligation to try to help, then do that. But never lose sight of the fact that you're a sinner too. When it comes to the point you made a minute ago, the word is escaping me now. I'm trying to remember what it was, and I can't remember it. But the whole idea of trying to help when you can, but not trying to meddle in the lives of other people. I mean, you wouldn't go up to a total stranger and start rebuking him for some, you know, personal habit or fashion statement or something, because you have no reason to do so. But if you're talking and somebody asks you about it, or if it's a family member, or there's some situation where you have some reason to do it, then it makes sense in that category. So anyway, those are my thoughts off the top, Matt. Something for all of us to think about, that's for sure. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Horacio now in Las Vegas. Good morning, Horacio.
Good morning, Patrick. A pleasure to talk to you. My question is about the rosary. I was raised Catholic, and every time we pray the litany after the five mysteries, I was taught to kneel. But then, you know, trying to be true to my beliefs, I feel like kneeling is a posture of worshiping God. And yet, that's something that I've always done. I still do with my family every time we pray the rosary. So what are your thoughts on that? Is it okay to kneel, or is it one of those traditions that creep in that are a little, I don't know, unclear? So I was wondering if you could enlighten me. Thank you.
Well, I'll do my best. So there's nothing wrong with kneeling when you're praying the rosary. It's a prayer posture. It's not the only prayer posture, but it's certainly one. And there's no inherent meaning that you are worshiping Mary, because obviously that's a terrible sin, the sin of idolatry. So you can kneel and know that this kneeling is a sign of your devotion, and it's also a gesture of veneration, gesture of respect. It's interesting to me because this whole idea about bowing down before things, in Exodus chapter 20, you see where God says, do not carve any graven images of anything in the sky above or the earth beneath or the waters beneath the earth. Do not bow down before them and worship them. That obviously is idolatry. But you, even just a simple word study will show you that there are plenty of passages in the Old Testament that where you can see people bowing down in honor before another human being. So it's not intended in passages like Exodus 20 or Deuteronomy chapter 5 where we see this again, or Leviticus chapter 26 where we see it again. There's a time and place where that kind of a posture is wrong because it's intentionally worshiping an idol or anything that you might worship which would become an idol. So it's not to say that it's always okay. If you have the wrong intention, then it's not okay. But if your intention is to bow before, you know, let's say that your family, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some example where you might bow out of respect to somebody else. Those kinds of things, because the intention is different, those kinds of things are okay. In fact, they can even be very praiseworthy to do that. So I would take the same approach when it comes to the rosary. Nothing wrong with kneeling. You can pray the rosary when you're driving or walking or kneeling or standing or sitting. The fact that you're praying is the main thing. And if you know exactly why you're doing this and to whom you're addressing this, then all the more important. Thanks, Horacio. We're going to be right back with Hour 3 right after this, so please don't go anywhere.
Taco Tuesday! Taco Tuesday!
Happy Taco Tuesday!